Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
It could be that at some earlier time, somewhere in the universe, a civilization evolved by probably some kind of Darwinian means to a very, very high level of technology and designed a form of life that they seeded onto perhaps this planet. Now, that is a possibility and intriguing.
Wait a second. Richard Dawkins thought intelligent design might be a legitimate pursuit?
And that designer could well be a higher intelligence from elsewhere in the universe. Well, but that higher intelligence would itself have had to have come about by some explicable or ultimately explicable process.
So Professor Dawkins was not against intelligent design, just certain types of designers, such as God.
That's Richard Dawkins and Ben Stein having a very interesting conversation from the movie Expelled. We're going to be talking about intelligent design, its opponents, and their arguments for the next 40 minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number as we talk with Dr. William Dembski, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Or you can email us right here in the studio on this Friday afternoon, November the 21st, TalkBack at issuesetc.org, TalkBack at issuesetc.org. Oh, it was probably 5 years ago I read my first book on intelligent design, and I was a bit skeptical because I wondered what the enterprise was all about, and then suddenly everyone was talking about intelligent design. And most of what you were hearing, you've probably heard this yourself, was, well, intelligent design, it's just a thinly veiled religious claim, or it's not scientific, or it's anti-scientific. Are any of these claims and objections true? We'll answer those questions for the next 40 minutes of the program. Dr. William Dembski is a research professor of philosophy at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. He's senior fellow for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, co-author of the new book, Understanding Intelligent Design, and an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Objection Overruled, Responding to the Top 10 Objections to Intelligent Design. Dr. Dembski, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you.
How do you respond to the big one, which is intelligent design is really the wolf of creationism in sheep's clothing?
Well, if you look at the history of design thinking, which is a long history, I mean, it's not that it's just come on the scene. I mean, the conflict, as it were, between evolution and design goes back millennia. I mean, the Greek pre-Socratic philosophers were fighting this one out. I think we need to start by just looking at the definitions. Okay, I mean, creationism certainly commits you to a doctrine of creation. So there's a God who's the source of being of everything, and usually it also means, in this culture at least, that there's a conscious attempt to harmonize a certain interpretation of Genesis with the facts of science. Okay, so that's usually what is meant by creationism. Usually it's young earth creationism, so a literal 6,000, 6,000 year creation is what is how it's conceived. Now, intelligent design has really no stake in that. There are lots of Christians who hold to intelligent design, but there are people who are not Christians who hold, or even in the Judeo-Christian tradition who hold to that. If I had to give a definition of intelligent design, a soundbite definition, it would be this. Intelligent design is the study of patterns in nature that are best explained as the product of intelligence. Okay, and so there are lots of special sciences that are already doing intelligent design. Think of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. There are lots of radio signals coming from outer space. Are any of those signals the result of alien intelligences, or are they all just random radio noise? So we draw these distinctions all over the place in life. You know, was it by chance, accident, randomness, or is there intention, purpose, design behind something? Archaeologist, is that a random chunk of rock or is that an arrowhead? So we ask these questions in all different contexts. So what's the big deal if we ask them about the universe as a whole or about biology? You know, are living things designed? Do they give evidence? Are there patterns that we find in material, in organisms that would point us to an intelligence and to the insufficiency of purely material forces, unguided material forces, which is what evolution is all about? Or is that sufficient, or do we need something more? Do we need intelligence? And so that's basically what the question is. And so it's not really getting into the question of ultimate causes. I mean, the designer that you get out of intelligent design is an intelligence adequate to explain the things that we see there. But it's not going to be necessarily an infinite, personal, transcendent God who saves humanity through Jesus Christ. I mean, the logic from intelligent design won't get you there. It's friendly to Christian theism and to creationism in a way that I would say evolution never was and can be, but it doesn't get you there. So there, you know, I've been to the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies. I've spoken on intelligent design there, been warmly received, and yet they don't hold to a doctrine of creation as Christians do. So I think that there are some fundamental distinctions, and it's very convenient for people who are opposed to intelligent design to label it as creationism in a cheap tuxedo. You know, if you want to go that route, then I think you're going to have to say that Aristotle was a creationist in a cheap toga or something like that, because, I mean, there are lots of philosophers, philosophical traditions, and religious traditions which do not hold to a doctrine of creation, but which would be on the intelligent design side and not on the materialist evolution side.
Why have the proponents of the unguided material forces explanation, evolution in essence, why have they been so vociferous in their critique and response to intelligent design?
Well, I think there's several things going on. I mean, one, I think we're dealing with potentially a scientific revolution, and this has been well documented. The most famous account of that is Thomas Kuhn's Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And you look at what happens when science changes. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, most of the scientific theories have had to be radically revised or ended up on the dust heap of history. So this happens, and when it happens, there's certain sociological forces that come into play, and the old guard, the status quo, likes to stay entrenched. I mean, they've got the power, the money, the research funds, and all of that, and so they're going to keep pushing for, you know, I mean, what they've invested their life and livelihood in. So I think that there's some of that is at stake. But I think intelligent design goes even beyond that, because it's really getting at some fundamental worldview issues. You know, what is the nature of nature? Is nature something that's purely material, guided, controlled only by unbroken natural laws? Or is nature an informationally open system where information can flow in from intelligent sources? I mean, that's a question that intelligent design raises. The nature of scientific inquiry. Should science be limited to natural explanations, which means explanations essentially in terms of energy, matter, unguided forces, or is teleology, purpose, design, does it have a fundamental place in the sciences? See, the materialistic scientists, they're fine with things like search for extraterrestrial intelligence or archaeology, because the intelligences that would be involved in those cases could be material intelligence. You gave that little thing from the movie Expelled with Richard Dawkins. I mean, he's fine even in a sense if life on Earth is designed, provided that the designer, itself, evolved on another planet by Darwinian means. Okay, but somewhere, you know, there's got to be a materialistic story told. Well, what intelligent design is doing is saying, hey, if there's design in biology, if it's involved in life, then that would have to be an unevolved intelligence. Okay, so suddenly evolution, material forces, material processes are not enough. There's something else going on, which means that the materialist then doesn't have a totalizing explanation of everything. You know, there's something that, you know, they're no longer the high priests of culture at that point. There's something they don't know. There's something that they can't get an adequate grasp on. And I think that's very threatening to them, because they are very much in the driver's seat at this point in the culture at large.
I'm wondering, we've only got a minute before our first break, Dr. Dembski, but I'm wondering whether or not, in some sense, the materialist scientists have made this bed for themselves, at least in a small way, in that they have very cavalierly up to this point, until ID raised its head, used the language of design when it's completely inconsistent with their theory of nature and the patterns therein. But they have talked very freely about, oh, this has been designed this way, or evolution designed this or that organism.
Well, sure. I mean, Francisco Ayala is probably the best, most prominent evolutionary thinker on this side of the Atlantic. I mean, he said that it was Darwin's greatest achievement to show that you could get the creative organization, the design in living things, without the need for a designer or creator. I mean, that's Darwin's great achievement. I mean, it's the ultimate free lunch. Get design without a designer. And the designer substitute in this case is natural selection, which is itself an oxymoron, because selection properly is only something that intelligent agents do, but by putting natural in front of it, somehow nature can do it all. I mean, it's a terrific sleight of hand.
Dr. William Dembski is our guest. We've got another half hour with him on the other side of the break. We're talking about intelligent design. You can join us as well. We're coming to you this Friday afternoon, the 21st of November, live, 1-877-623-MY-IE. 877-623-6943, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. When we come back, let's see. It's often said, having laid aside the whole creationism in sheep's clothing objection, it's often said that ID is just bad science. It isn't good science. It isn't science on par with the materialist explanation that is put forth in the theory of evolution. Now, there's real science, they say. ID is junk science. Is this true? We'll answer that objection with Dr. William Dembski after this.
Just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Six periods or 6 days? Can we know?
Answers with Ken Ham, a speaker at the popular Answers in Genesis conferences.
I've heard many Christians say that the 6 days of creation were really millions of years in length. And others say we can't know and it doesn't matter anyway. But it does matter, and we can know for sure. If you're one who says the 6 days of creation were long periods of time, then ask yourself, where'd I get this idea? If we're really honest, we didn't get it from the Bible, but from the secular teaching that the world is billions of years old. You've used man's theories as a judge on God's word. Now, if you start with the Bible and look at its language, you'll find that the Hebrew word for day, as used in the context of Genesis chapter 1, has to mean an ordinary day. And why does this matter? It's important to take God at his word. Otherwise, we could change the meaning of any teaching in the Bible. And if we accept millions of years, we've allowed for death, disease, and suffering to exist before sin, and that's opposite to the Bible's teaching. The creation days were 6 24-hour days.
If you're not convinced, we hope you'll get a copy of our wonderful booklet on the age of the earth, entitled 7 Reasons Not to Accept Millions of Years. In fact, the booklet's so good, we'd like to send 10 to you when you present a donation of any amount. This is the last day of our offer, so get the booklets when you call our toll-free number, 1-888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS, or go to the web, answersoffer.org.
Hello, I'm Dr. Wanda Franz, president of National Right to Life. As a mother of three and a developmental psychologist, I know that adolescents need their parents' guidance in making wise decisions. Yet pro-abortion advocates insist that parents do not have the right to be involved in their minor daughter's abortion decision. We at National Right to Life need your help. Visit our website at www.nrlc.org. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life.
There is a mystery, I have to admit. You know, we try to understand nature, and we ask questions, and we get answers, and then we ask follow-up questions. Well, why is that true? And ultimately, we hope to come to some set of elegant physical principles that describe everything. And when we have it, the mystery will still be there. And one answer is, well, that is the regularity imposed on it by a spirit, a designer. I think we're permanently in the tragic position of not being able to understand at the deepest possible level why things are the way they are. We'll just have to live with that. But saying, well, it's a designer, doesn't settle it, doesn't help.
Nobel laureate and physicist Steven Weinberg talking about design. He says it's just not an adequate explanation, and none really is. We're talking about intelligent design with Dr. William Dembski, senior fellow for the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, research professor of philosophy at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. His latest book, co-authored Understanding Intelligent Design, and an article in the latest edition of the Christian Research Journal titled Objection Overruled, Responding to the Top 10 Objections to Intelligent Design. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Dembski, which has the better claim to solid science, the unguided material forces explanation or the intelligent design explanation?
You know, it's so funny you put these quotes up there. Steven Weinberg, I know him. I've had dinner with him and his wife, several other people. And he was going off much along the lines that in the quote just now. And his wife said, yeah, with these physicists, when they get their Nobel Prize or whatever, you know, they think they can talk with authority about everything. She's herself a lawyer, law professor at UT Austin. You know, but I mean, clearly you're talking to a partisan here, right? I mean, I'm an intelligent design person, and so I'm going to say, well, of course, intelligent design has the better claim to science. But I think there's a good argument that can be made in that favor, because intelligent design is already part of science. I mean, we went in the previous segment over search for extraterrestrial intelligence, archaeology. I mean, there are other special sciences, forensic science, random number generation. So there are lots of special sciences that are already doing, as it were, intelligent design research. If you cash out intelligent design in strictly scientific terms, it becomes a theory of information where you're tracking information. Information is a very well understood concept scientifically already. But I think there's a more general question at stake here. Because it seems that to say, well, it couldn't be design, okay, because that's what it seems the mainstream scientific community is saying. That suggests that they know something about nature which they really don't. I mean, how do you know on a priori grounds that there's no design there? You know, it's certainly a logical possibility. In fact, I mean, you can run some thought experiments in which it becomes very clear that a designer would be necessary to explain certain things. I mean, if, for instance, the DNA in humans, whenever you looked in the DNA, you found when you represented, let's say, the DNA sequence as ASCII characters from a keyboard, you always got some limerick, which is unique to the person, you know, in English. That would be remarkable. You know, you'd say, well, that could not be explained except by some sort of intelligence. So, you know, to invoke intelligence, it can be explanatory. We don't have to then immediately explain, well, where did that intelligence come from? All explanation has to stop at some point. I mean, where did the Jupiter Symphony come from? Well, Mozart composed it. Okay, but you haven't explained anything because you haven't told me where Mozart came from. Well, you know, explanation doesn't have to go that far. So it seems to me that, I mean, what intelligent design is doing is it's saying that at least we should consider design as an option, as a possibility, not rule it out. Insofar as material explanations work well, let's use them. I mean, no intelligent design person is saying Darwin got it completely wrong. And they're saying natural selection, it certainly works, but it seems to have limited scope. And this is also a common finding in science, that scientific theories do not cover everything. I mean, this is what they want us, what the hardcore evolutionists want to say. It explains everything in biology. And it doesn't. You know, it seems to explain small-scale, limited adaptive changes, but in terms of the large-scale changes, you know, it explains how insects develop insecticide resistance, how finch beaks may get harder during and bigger during a drought season because they have to crack harder nuts. But it doesn't explain where you get finches in the first place or where you get insects. And that's the grand claim of evolution. That's what's supposed to make the theory interesting. And it hasn't accounted for that. And it does seem that there's good evidence, good reasons for thinking that design is real in biology. One thing also to be aware of is that to say that design is real doesn't mean that every aspect of biology is designed. Now, Richard Dawkins, he will write on page one of the Blind Watchmaker, biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. For him, there is no actual design in biology. It's all appearance, or at best, appearance of design. So the challenge for the design person then is not to show that every aspect of biology is designed. It's enough to show that there are some aspects of that biology that are designed. And it seems that we do now have increasingly a good grasp of certain systems, biological systems, where the design, the evidence for design is proving overwhelming.
Is it testable? Is ID testable?
Sure. I mean, Darwin claimed to test it. I mean, if you look, I mean, he put it in terms of creation, but I mean that was his foil throughout the Origin of Species. He claimed to have tested design and found it wanting. I mean, one of his biggest proofs was from biogeography. He looked at how organisms were distributed, and he said this doesn't make sense from the vantage of special creation. Okay, now I think he took special creation in a very limited sense. I think design actually would work more broadly. But he claimed to have tested design and disproven it. So, I mean, we're dealing here with empirical science. If something is testable in the sense that it can be refuted, then there could be also facts that could confirm it. I mean, it can't. If nothing can confirm something, if all that can happen is that something can be disconfirmed, excuse me, then the alternative theory is not an empirically based theory that is itself subject to confirmation, but it becomes a necessary truth. And it's actually funny when you look at some of the evolutionists where evolution is treated as a necessary truth, as incontrovertible as 2 + 2 = 4. I mean, I've actually seen this. I mean, there was an Amherst biologist, Paul Ewald, who says natural selection, random variation, it's like arithmetic. Richard Dawkins, I mean, design is an impossibility for him because science must explain by going from the simple to the complex. The problem with the designer is that the designer is going to be more complex in his view than the thing that's designed. So it's not explanatory. It can't work. You know. So I mean, I think the burden, of your question is design testable? I would turn it around. Is evolution testable? You know. And I think for many of the evolutionists, it's not. I mean, they sometimes come back and say, well, if you could find a rabbit fossil in the Precambrian, okay, that would be a fossil out of sequence. That would disprove evolution. Well, it wouldn't really. I mean, what it would do is it maybe would challenge that there's a single tree of life. But the mechanism, the materialistic mechanism of evolution, natural selection, that I think they would never give it up under any circumstances. I don't think they would say there would be any evidence that they would regard as adequate to overthrow it.
Is that really? I mean, it seems to me very helpful to realize in this entire debate that. You know, the basic claims here, the modest claim of intelligent design being that it's a worthy pursuit to look into the possibility that things that appear to be designed are, in fact, the product of intelligence, that there's information here and that means there's a source of information. Is it also equally worthy to kind of get past all of the accretions on the evolutionary's claim and just says what we're really talking about here is what you said before, unguided material forces really is the whole ball game for evolution when it comes down
well,
to
that,
it.
Yeah, I mean, that is what is meant. I did a debate at the American Museum of Natural History about 6 years ago, and when you do a debate, there's a debate question, you know, and people will, the debaters will fall on either side of the question. And when I got the email asking me to take part in the debate question was blind evolution or intelligent design, ? When I got to the debate, or programs being handed out, it was an auditorium, And the debate question had been changed. It was then evolution or intelligent design, question mark. So the word blind had been dropped. Now, I don't think the organizers meant to pull a fast one. It's just that blind evolution and evolution, it's the same thing. And I mean, that's what the evolutionists mean by it. There's nothing about the evolutionary process that would point to a designer or an intelligence. Now, I mean, the theistic evolutionists, such as Francis Collins, I mean, they'll put a theological spin on it. They'll say, well, but God set up the whole world so that this process carries through and then gives rise to human beings. But there's nothing in that process that would point to intelligence. So it becomes a pure faith move to say that God set it up. You know, but I think, you know, it's really important to understand that intelligent design is really the only thing keeping the scientists honest at this point about evolution and its capacities and what it can do and what it can't do. Because it's often said that science is self-correcting. One of my colleagues says, you know, it's about as self-correcting as the mafia. It's when you force the issue that people then will admit that there are problems.
Dr. William Dembski is our guest. We're talking about intelligent design. It's Friday afternoon, the 21st of November. What do you think about intelligent design? Give us a call during this break. 10 more minutes on the other side. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Have you been hungering for a richer life of prayer and meditation on God's Word? Well, Concordia Publishing House is pleased to bring you Treasury of Daily Prayer. It's coming in October. To experience Treasury of Daily Prayer, click the book cover on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or you can order an advance copy of Treasury of Daily Prayer by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Treasury of Daily Prayer.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making an online gift today, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support.
What I do is concede the point that it does look designed, so people's intuitions are correct in that sense. Eyes are designed to see. Yes, indeed, they are. And the wing is designed to fly. Design, before Darwin, the natural inference was a top-down architectural-like designer. What Darwin gave us then was a theory to show how the design actually can come about through functional adaptations, designed, as it were, by natural selection.
Michael Shermer of the Skeptic Society addressing the issue of intelligent design. We're talking intelligent design with Dr. William Dembski. Tim is calling from his car. Hi, Tim.
How you doing, sir?
Very well.
I think Dr. Dembski hit it on the head just as it was pointed out in Expelled that this is a worldview. And the evolutionists are concerned with losing their stranglehold on those institutions in our society that, that give them so much prominence and so much power. So we have that pride issue that, that you see coming into effect there. And I think that's where the fight has to be taken taken up. But I think once we, as Dr. Dempsey just said before, get to the point where everyone says, okay, well, intelligent design does have a part of the issue, a part of the picture. There is a possibility, and then we can start, once we get to that point, we can move forward from that.
Tim, thank you so much. Your thoughts there, Dr. Dembski?
Well, I wish it were that easy. I mean, you know, I think this is a multi-pronged, multi-level battle. You know, I think it happens. I think at some level, though, the science ends up being the fundamental question. You know, where is the evidence pointing? Is it pointing to intelligent design, or is it pointing to the sufficiency of these material forces? And it's interesting. We're getting some conversions to the design point of view. Anthony Flew, for instance. Before Richard Dawkins was the best-known atheist in the English-speaking world. He converted or deconverted from atheism to theism as a result of intelligent design arguments. In fact, he has an endorsement for a book I did, a different one, The Design of Life, where he says if you've read Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, now, you know, for the millions who've read that, now look at this book if you want the truth about this matter. So I think, you know, that's where the debate has to be, I think, fundamentally decided. But then it's going to ramify throughout the culture. I mean, there are these worldview theological questions. How is this going to play out also in the schools? Right now, this Darwinian materialistic form of evolution, that is textbook orthodoxy. That's what the kids are taught, and they are not taught that there are even any problems or questions with it. You have a group called the National Center for Science Education. Their director basically says, you know, the kids, they can't handle, they need consensus science. They can't handle any controversy about that because that's only going to confuse them. I mean, it's taking a really low view of our high schoolers, but that's the approach. So it ends up being total indoctrination. So I think, you know, we're dealing with things at the level of the schools, the education, the courts weigh in. We've always got these First Amendment issues which are coming in because the atheist, it always seems to work in their favor. I mean, they're as or more ideologically driven. Their faith in this, in an atheistic worldview, is sometimes, I think, even stronger than that on the part of the theists. And yet, you know, when it comes to the First Amendment, they seem to be protected, and then we're the religious crazies. You know, so it's multi-pronged, multifaceted, and you know, I think with the, you know, with the political scene now in this country, with possible changes with the Supreme Court, I think we've probably faced an uphill battle.
Drew in Houston, Texas, emails us. He says the argument that evolution is unchallengeable proves that the evolution is more religious than the Christian creationist or ID apologist. It's the very nature of religious fanaticism to state that something is true and unchallengeable. Also, he says, it occurs to me that the most common arguments within religion and philosophy are to make the sleight of hand evolutionists use. If we can condemn all other potential options, it proves that our option is true. Your thoughts there, Dr. Dembski?
Yeah, I mean, if you stated that baldly, you know, where it's, well, are you saying, dear evolutionist, that you know, that this theory is unchallengeable? I think they will back off. But practically speaking, I think that's what happens. And I think Darwin, in a sense, set the agenda there. In his book, The Origin of Species, he says, if it could be shown that some complex organ could not possibly have occurred except through numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. Okay, so he says that, you know, if you can show it could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. But then he immediately adds, but I can find out no such case. And the problem is, if all you're requiring is show that it could not possibly have happened by these numerous successive slight modifications, I mean, basically you're asking to show a universal negative, show that there's no possible pathway. And effectively, that becomes an impossible task. I mean, it's basically telling the design person who wants to disprove this theory to be Sisyphus, keep trying, try to get the rock up that hill. Oh, you didn't. We didn't get it up that hill. Now try this hill. Try that hill. And the thing is, you never run out of hills. And so it effectively, that's what ends up happening. I mean, so they're not going to admit that they're being unreasonable, you know, but they're going to just keep raising the bar and changing the bar, and effectively their theory never gets put to challenge.
Robert in Fullerton, Nebraska asks, among other things, do evolutionary scientists listen to the arguments of intelligent design on their own merits, or are they already convinced that ID can't be right? If they won't listen, what does this suggest about their abilities as scientists?
That's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of the critics that I deal with, and now who've even written books, and even people on the theistic evolutionist side. So, I mean, these are people who will subscribe to the Christian creeds, but are thoroughly evolutionary in their thinking. It seems to me that they are just adamant, implacably opposed to intelligent design. So they're not going to give it the time of day. And I rarely get the sense that I've got a real conversation going with them. You know, it seems that they're out to kill intelligent design rather than allow me at the table and my colleagues at the table for a serious discussion. You know, and I think this actually touches on a theme earlier in the broadcast. You know, is it bad science? Is it junk science? Well, even bad science can be science. But I think they want to say it's pseudoscience. It's not even science. Okay, it doesn't even get to that level. And so, you know, we're just going to have to keep you at arm's length. And so it ends up being, I think, what you end up seeing is a lot of political moves to disenfranchise intelligent design. I think the Dover case is a case in point. This was an intelligent design case in which the ACLU weighed in because they knew that this was had a situation in which intelligent design was put into law in a way that was quite vulnerable. All the intelligent design people I knew were saying, rescind the policy, Dover, but they decided to still stick with it, and they got burned.
Finally, then, with only a minute, Dr. Dembski, why is the unguided material forces explanation that we just will call for convenience sake evolutionary explanation? Why is it essentially inferior science?
The evidence doesn't support it. I mean, when we look inside the cell, there's been a revolution in molecular biology in the last 30 years, and when we look inside the cell, we find high-tech nano-engineered systems. We need to be systems engineers, material engineers, electrical engineers to understand these systems. Okay, and so it's not a big stretch to say maybe there's real engineering involved there. And on the flip side, the evolutionist basically has the same sort of explanation. I mean, it's natural selection and random variation did it, but there's no specificity there. They cannot lay out detailed Darwinian pathways to any of these nano-engineered systems. When I say any of them, I mean, it's a pervasive problem. It's not just that we've identified a few systems. It's that there's basically all this engineering inside, high-tech engineering that dwarfs anything that human engineers have come up with, and yet we need to be engineers even to appreciate what's going on there. So it's not an argument from ignorance that we're going with intelligent design. It's not that we just don't know what's going on there, so God must have done it. It's precisely because of what we know about these systems and the complexities and design features that we're saying design is real here.
Folks, we have a link posted to Dr. William Dembski under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. William Dembski is a research professor of philosophy at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, senior fellow for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, co-author of the new book, Understanding Intelligent Design, and an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Objection Overruled, Responding to the Top 10 Objections to Intelligent Design. Dr. Dembski, thanks so much for being our guest.
My pleasure.
You know, I was thinking about this earlier today. It really comes down to believing what your eyes tell you. I mean, that's what scientists are supposed to be. They're supposed to be empiricists. They're supposed to be those who believe what their eyes tell them. Not believing a theory in spite of the facts and in spite of the evidence, but believing what their eyes tell them. And I think you look about in the world, whether it be the very large or whether it be the very small, at the great intricacy and the great harmony and symphony that is especially life, even on the smallest scale, and you say to yourself, my eyes are telling me something. They're telling me that there is an intelligence behind all of this. Well, scientists, believe what your eyes tell you. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.